I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call.
Councillor Stone.
Here.
Councillor Egbert.
Here.
Councillor Boggs.
Here.
Councillor Meyer.
Here.
Councillor Anderson.
Yeah.
Councillor Lethier.
Here.
Mayor McKnight.
Here. Sorry. Introduction of media. We have any media here tonight? Announcements. Anyone wishing to speak before the City Council tonight on any subject matter will need to fill out a speaker form and turn it into the recorder. Forms are available on the sign-in table in the back of the room. Public comment, agenda items only. The purpose of public comment period is to allow citizens to present information or raise issues regarding agenda items only. There will be a time at the end of the meeting for citizens to speak about off-agenda items. A time limit of 3 minutes per citizen shall apply. All citizens must come up to the microphone and please state name and address. So I do have some here. Just going to take them what order I got them here. Linda? On the sign ordinance. And just to let you know, Linda, we are going to, I'm going to let you come up and talk since you thought it was on the agenda. We're going to be taking that off the agenda. We're going to have a workshop on it.
Okay.
So, but I still want you to talk because I didn't want you to.
You know, we have received a letter from, my name is Linda Pinsent. My address is 133 Westwood Street, Sutherland, Oregon.
I can't hear you at all.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, sorry. I'm not as tall as the microphone. My name is Linda Pinsent, and I have the Magic Mushroom Lamp Company, Oregon Gifts at the freeway. And we received a letter from the city saying that we were not within the ordinance and that we would be required to remove our sign that was put up on the first. First of all, it is not a sign. It is a piece of art. Whether you like it or not, it's not a sign. It was designed as a piece of art to make a statement about the new laws that came into play on July 1st. And second of all, the whole purpose of a Chamber of Commerce is to promote business. My store has been there for 18 years. We have promoted the restaurants, the hotels, Cooper Creek. You know, when Gassy Creek was open at the bookstore, other stores, whatever stores, I try to, once I can get somebody off the freeway, to send them to town. So we chose artwork. We didn't make a sign saying, a huge sign saying Magic Mushroom. So I'm a little confused as to why a piece of art fits into signage. And I'd like you to address it if you could.
I'll have the attorney do that, but we won't address that at this meeting.
Yeah,
okay.
But we will have a workshop, and we'll let you know. And, you know, that way we can really discuss it.
And I'd like to know if the other 40 to 50 people also received letters.
Okay.
Because our police chief did say there were 40 to 50 other people who did not fit into the list.
Okay, fair enough. Thank you. Okay, next one is Mike. Banning dispensaries and settlements. Excuse me.
Well, they've already made the decision on us, so there's no point in comment.
Okay. Robert.
Well, I know you folks have made the decision on that.
You want to come up to the mic if you like?
My name is Robert O'Brien. Can everybody hear me?
Yep.
Live at 1309 Sunny Court. My mailing address is P.O. Box 1163 in Sutherland. If anybody wants to send me anything, that's the way to do it. I understand that a decision's been made, what I think it is, so maybe a point of clarification might be in order. Now, is the ordinance regarding marijuana dispensaries, is that a flat-out ban? If so, I'd like to speak against that. If it's just a tax ordinance, like it says on the agenda, then a point. One point is business revenue. I see, I go up and down Central Avenue at least a couple of times every day, and I see no less than 50 to 60% of every business boarded up, shut, and four or five of them just within the last 2 weeks. I think having a medical marijuana dispensary and or even a recreational one can help bring some business into this city and a possible revenue stream. I know this city just had to recently terminate its contract or do away with the city fire department and rely on fire services with Fire District 2, which covers all of Douglas County, if I'm not mistaken. So I would really like to see this city allow at least one medical and or recreational marijuana facilities, considering all the liquor store and tobacco places here in town. Can one medical dispensary hurt? Thank you.
Thank you. Have any more than that on the agenda items? On the presentations, Chamber of Commerce.
Well, good evening, Mayor McKnight and members of the City Council. My name is Tammy Trowbridge, and I'm the president of the Chamber of Commerce. And we are excited to report that we had some pretty successful events, I would say, in Sutherland this month. It's been pretty exciting and busy, but good. The street fair that was attached to the graffiti weekend for our first year event, we just really felt was over the top. We got great participation. The graffiti was great, and the drag push races were fun, and everybody loved them. And I just thank Gary so much for doing that. Great idea. And what was really fabulous for us was how the community came together. Everybody came together. We'd really like to thank the City of Sutherland for all the help that they provided to us during the course of that event. And we're just really grateful that everything went so well. And again, looking forward to it again next year and bigger and better. We learned some things. You know, we're having a debriefing when we can finally get everybody together, but we asked people to make notes on what worked, what didn't. And there were a few what didn't, but you know, for a first year event, we thought it overall went pretty well. So the thing that I was really pleased, I mean, over the top pleased, because the well attended, everybody had fun, but then when I came back down Central Street later and I had other people report the same thing to me, every restaurant was just jam-packed. And I went into Padotti's at about 8:30, and Shauna told me that if I'd been there any earlier, I wouldn't have been able to find a place to park because they were parking out on Central and it was jammed. So, you know, the event, it worked. Brought people to town. We had people from way out of town, out of state actually, stopping and talking to Pamela before they did the drive, and so it was just really fun and very successful. And the Stampede, we thought, was also very successful, well attended. Those parking areas were just jammed. The parade was lots of fun. We had a couple of centenarians that we were able to honor as our grand marshals, and they were darling. I was going to bring a picture, but then realized that would just take your time as I pass it around. So if you want to stop by my office, I'm also going to get that to Pat Greer over at the Cozy Kitchen. She's going to put one up. So they were darling, and we just really appreciated the community supporting both of those events. And let's see, so we have received the street signs, but we've been a little short staffed in the public works department, right? And so as soon as they get everybody back full staff, they'll be working on those.
But how many did you get?
Pardon?
How many signs did you get? Did you tell us that before? I don't remember.
I probably did, but it's off my radar now.
That's okay. That's what I was just curious.
There's quite a few.
Oh, cool. It's going to be between the railroad tracks and the park.
Park, okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, so it should be really, really fun. And I do have four flags committed for purchase by private people. And as soon as the fourth person decides which one they want, we'll be ordering another round. TRT funds will finance one, and then the other four will be private. And so we'll have another round of five coming off probably by early fall, so that's kind of exciting. But speaking of exciting, okay, so this is obvious, the biggest news by far, and I had to kind of lobby to be able to present this, because really, the only connection I have with it is tourism, and I think it's going to be huge for that. But also, I thought if you looked at the whole picture and saw actually how we got to here, it's kind of fascinating, and sometimes when they're right in the middle of it, city staff might not have that perspective. So you'll understand as I go along here, there's a developer who is very interested in the properties west of the freeway. He has an exciting idea, concept that he's running with, and I mean proceeding with, and this is like in the second month of this process, and developers are usually guys with big vision, and they don't, you know, you have to be able to see something and have several ideas before you actually find one that's going to go. And so early on, the possibility of this was probably fairly low, but as it's moved along, he thought, and city staff thought, it was time to bring you guys on board with that, just so you'd be aware that this was going on and a possibility, and the possibility is increasing. And so sometimes we private sector folks look at some of the activities of the government sector, okay, just as superfluous to say the least, okay? I'm sure you kind of understand what I mean right there. Because we don't operate in those arenas much. We don't really appreciate the processes that have come to be central in getting large-scale anything done in today's world. Somehow it's changed significantly since probably Patty Ford was building his empire, right? So those things have changed. And so when Jerry was talking about applying for the Economic Opportunity Analysis Grant and then getting it, and the CRST team, I think, that did the analysis, and they were looking at land use and targeting industries and then doing the market pro forma and all of those things, it kind of seemed like fluff. I mean, it was just kind of like, wow, you know, I don't know what that's going to do for us on the ground level. And, you know, what could come from this? Well, let me tell you what's come from this. I mean, this really has been a good lesson for me, and I don't know if any of you guys think this that same way, but as a private sector person, you just don't really even get over in that arena, and then to see it developing into something like this is just really amazing. First, I'd like to thank him for his vision to start meeting with the property owners of that group, that block over there, because before that, I think they were all pretty much in their own little cubby working on their own thing. And Jerry started working with them as a group, meeting and kind of bringing them along as that they should be a group instead of individuals. And they decided to buy into that process, and that is one of the keystone things that makes this project possible to even move along. And so, and then as they were talking about this economic opportunity analysis grant with the property owners, keeping them in the loop on that, one of those property owners happened to be an acquaintance of a developer in the Portland area named Bruce Brunette. And he has an impressive list of accomplishments behind him, and he's currently building an apartment complex in Portland, I believe. But when this property owner mentioned that this analysis that had been done here and that had targeted this specific area for a tourism-type development and the location, one thing kind of led to another, and Bruce agreed to come down with him and meet with city staff and drive around and just look at it. I mean, you know, we're just kind of talking concept here. So Bruce came down and met with all the property owners, city staff. I got to be on that meeting. Thank you for including me, Jerry. And just chatted. And this happened the first week of June. And he didn't have a firm plan then, but he knew, even though this market pro forma and the economic analysis had kind of indicated that a strip mall or a water park might be appropriate for that, he said, you know, I'm not really interested in a strip mall because I don't think it worked out well for Lincoln City or Troutdale. And that a Great Wolf-style water park resort was too expensive at about $300 a night for regular people to be able to use. And he wasn't interested in that. He wanted something that, you know, regular people could go and have a great time. So, but he had a tentative idea about a historic interpretive center about the timber industry, and where it started, how its transition stayed alive, that we're really not, you know, killing spotted owls by the hundreds. And where it's headed now, and where better to do that than in the heart of what used to be known as the timber capital of the nation. So at that meeting, everyone was very interested in moving forward, including the owners. And so even though this was very conceptual at this point, he knew he wanted to build something themed around the timber industry, but including wine industry, the Oregon wine industry, and possibly some other Oregon companies. So he's still just talking to people and reaching out to see if he can generate interest. And he called a few of his investor friends and started getting only yays. Yeah, nobody's saying no, nobody's pushing back at him. People are very, very positive. I was a little skeptical at first, but he was not one of those big talker, smooth kind of guys. He was just real and very straightforward, and I was actually very encouraged by that meeting. Jerry drove him around the area, showed him the Sutherland properties, and then came back in over the hill between here and Oakland, and you really get a good view of that piece there. And he could see what a gem it was in terms of freeway and visibility, and it's just a perfect piece for this. So I'm skipping a lot of detail. I know it doesn't sound like it, but meetings and such like that. And so last week we attended another meeting. Bruce, all the property owners, ODOT, and other state staff that would be involved with a development this big. And this thing has gone from being something that maybe had a 50% chance of actually going to probably 85%. I mean, Bruce is very excited about this. He's formed a company, it's Oregon-only development. He's hired his first employee, who is a lady who had 26 years of experience, well, and time with a prominent hotel in Eugene, and she was incredibly excited about this project. They've talked to Ricky Wellman, the head of the Oregon Logging Conference for 42 years. She was very supportive. All these people in the industry that he's talking to about this are wondering why this idea, why it hasn't been done yet. This is a great idea. We need this as a timber industry. Why hasn't it been done yet? And they would absolutely move the conference down here if it was built. I mean, just some really exciting things. So they're kind of looking at a destination resort, conference center, possibly water park, interpretive center, going to include other Oregon companies. They listed about 50 right now, but talked to about 12 of them. Those guys are interested in being part of it. They've talked to the U of O. They're going to involve the universities. The U of O would be for marketing and land use work, or OSU for engineering. And evidently, if a development will cover the materials and travel, the university uses the project as curriculum, so it works well with everybody. Only going to use Oregon contractors. And so it fits zoning and land use requirements. It's all very exciting. And like I say, I really lobbied to be able to present this, because I just thought, wow, something that I thought was complete fluff, and how are we going to see tangible results out of this? I think we're going to see tangible results out of this. This guy is only here and only looking at this because of that economic opportunity analysis grant. And I think that it's only still on the table because those property owners have been meeting as a group. And they're in it together. And they are actually party to this development corporation, I believe, they're part of it. So it's very exciting. If this happens, Bruce said it would be the neatest project he had ever worked on, and it will also be because of the foresight and hard work of Jerry and his staff. So I wanted to just make sure that those kudos got out as we were telling you about this. So obviously it's still just a maybe, but a pretty strong maybe. It's very exciting. We're very excited. So, if you have questions, you're going to have to ask the technical people, because I'm just the excited one.
Thank you.
Danny, can I ask you a question?
You can ask your question. I don't know if I can answer it.
The additional 1,800 to the Blackberry Festival, was that for tourism?
That was all the same thing. We had only budgeted. That was last year, and this was our first year of administering the funds. So we had only budgeted 5,000, but they customarily asked for 6,800. And we had extra money, so when their request came in, we went ahead and funded the whole thing.
Okay. One other thing, since this is on the topic tonight, I read through one of these things we're going to be voting on here, that there's 7 businesses, could be enterprise zone businesses, by the medical marijuana facilities in Sutherland. How does the chamber feel about turning business away from the community?
Well, you know, we haven't addressed this as a chamber, as a board. or as members. We've been waiting to see how you guys go on this. It's kind of a sticky subject. I have several people that feel pretty strongly that probably doesn't need to be in the city. And so we're trying to foster business on a different level, less controversial. That's kind of how we feel about it. Maybe something that's not quite so edgy.
Well, that's what I was just wondering. One of them was a processing center, which could put more than 25 people to work in an enterprise zone. Mm-hmm. So that's why I was wondering when we're talking about turning business down, you know, not only the tax, but business, you know, I was just wondering because the chambers were leading.
I hadn't heard about that. You know, I'm sure that's something we could come up, bring up and talk about, see if we wanted to establish a position on that. I'd love to have something like this for a little bit more, but I mean, you know, but that is something we probably should consider.
Okay.
Thanks.
Thank you, Tammy. Natural disaster emergency preparation. I'd introduce you, but I'll let you do that.
Thanks so much. So my name is Tara Boggs, and I am a nurse down at Providence Medford Medical Center. Medford is technically where I live, but I've always kind of considered Sutherland my home. So I am a glutton for punishment, and I decided to go back to school to pursue my master's in nursing education. And through going back to school, we have a community health and public awareness class. We were supposed to address natural disasters, disaster management, and I thought, okay, looking around to see what Medford has and what Jackson County has, and through the research, I decided they actually have quite a lot. And then I wondered if I could maybe direct that attention somewhere else, to somewhere maybe we don't have as many resources. So I started looking at Douglas County and Sutherland. Definitely don't have the resources that Jackson County has, considering our population is, what, probably 68,000 smaller. So went through the research and really discovered that trying to find anything about natural disasters and disaster management was pretty tricky. It's, you can find it, but you have to go through the sheriff's department websites and start plowing through the pages and pages. Oh,
that's exciting reading.
It was really fun, yeah. It was a good time to do on my days off from work. And so in finding that, you know, I think it's unrealistic that most people would search through all of those pages of information. Made it kind of tricky, and it's obviously not exciting. So I thought, you know, it would be nice if Sutherland, especially, but could definitely be used countywide, had just an easy, hey, I have a piece of paper, I can use it as a checklist, and I need to get myself stocked up, because all of the research is showing it's not if something is going to happen, it's when. And obviously, you know, those of us who have grown up in Reedsport or made the trips down Highway 38 many, many times, landslides are huge. You know, they happen pretty much every year. So that can isolate a lot of people, depending on which part of the highway gets washed out. And when that happens, people need to be prepared for it. Realistically, most of us aren't. You know, we have a few of the doomsday preppers, and they're ahead of the game, but most of us don't have that. You know, we don't have things set up in our cars. We don't have, you know, basic supplies at home. Sometimes it's hard just for paycheck to paycheck, and we need, you know, the basics, the minimums, you know, to get us by. So the pamphlet I designed is just, you know, you can take it with you to the store, go through the hardware store, go through the grocery store, and, you know, be like, okay, I need, you know, a gallon of water per person per day, so stock up for your family. Water's something that's nice and it keeps. Bottled water, you know, gallons of water. You have a water purifying system, you could probably do it at home, too, with the big gallons. You know, things like extra blankets, changes of clothes, things that we don't think about, having that extra set in your car. So there's a list of little things. And then very important as well, because they can happen, drop of a hat, having your personal information in a spot, medication lists, and that's a lot of things that I didn't even think about because I don't really take any medications, but there are a lot of people that we have that need those. So it's just a really nice reminder, a really easy list to use so that you can just sit down and say, okay, I have now all in one location, you know, locked away in a safe or whatever, you can grab it easy. These are my emergency numbers, because most of us have things programmed in our cell phones these days, so we don't have them memorized anymore. My personal documents, my lists of prescriptions. And I thought it was also interesting when I was scoping through Jackson County stuff, because I took a little bit from them too. Not a bad idea, and I think that the council could actually address this. Having a centralized location for people who are more vulnerable and at risk, contact information, or, you know, seniors could call in and say, this is my info, this is where I live. I don't have transportation in the event that something like this were to happen, which eventually it will. I'm going to be at risk. I'm not going to be able to evacuate because I don't have a car. And that actually hit me because we have the great service here like Dial Ride. You know, not everybody has transportation, and they would have a hard time getting out of the town if they needed to. And so I think that would be a really nice thing for the city to address at some point. And you could actually probably register through the city website. I noticed that Jackson County actually has a website to do that. But they've also got programs set up for radio operators, so you can train to be a volunteer for the old hand radios, because communication is going to be so important. And the importance of having battery-powered radios, like the NOAA radios, so that you can be in tune to anything that's going on, when help might come to you, because they're going to try to deal with major emergencies first, so we're not going to be able to get to everybody as fast. So that was the thinking behind it, just to try and help people be prepared. And the pamphlet is now the City of Sutherland, so you can absolutely do whatever with it that you would like.
We can use you as an advisor.
Sure. All right. Because I have a lot of time. Work 3 nights a week, and then I work on homework the other 4 days.
All right. So,
yeah. Call me anytime.
Yeah.
But I just wanted to do a little bit of something to try and help.
Appreciate your efforts. That's great. I mean, yeah. It's
just coincidentally, just last week they had on television that there would be a big earthquake very soon here in northern Oregon, and that if everything west of I-5 would just be gone.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
That's behind this.
You know, it was really funny. I think the day after I had initially talked to Debbie, I checked the news, and San Francisco had an earthquake at 4.0. You know, so it's just they're happening more frequently, and you know, it's a prime area for something to happen. And just be nice to see, you know, the town and the people that we care about.
Sure. Yeah.
Be prepared for it.
Awesome. Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Very, very much.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you, stranger.
Next time, no duck stuff, okay?
That's all I have.
There's no way she's allowed in the door.
Okay, so next, like I said, I mentioned we took off the sign ordinance because we're going to have a future workshop on that. So we're on to consent agenda. Minutes from July 13, 2015, regular meeting. Is there a motion?
I move to approve. Approved consent agenda.
I'll second.
The moved and seconded. Approved the minutes from July 13, 2015 regular meeting. In discussion, go ahead and vote.
Councillor Stone.
Aye.
Councillor Egbert.
Aye.
Councillor Boggs.
Aye.
Councillor Meyer.
Aye.
Councillor Anderson.
Aye.
Councillor Lazier.
Aye.
Mayor McKnight.
Aye.
Motion carries.
Action items, general business, resolution 2015.11, fee schedule. Call for staff report.
Well, I guess it's all mine. This was presented last time, and you didn't have the copy that showed what we had before and what we're changing it to now. You have that now. There's three fees in there. There's a planning and development fee for addition of a worksheet. Worksheet permit would be $25. Addition of a right-of-way permit, which is $50, and an increase in the sign permit to $50, which was $25. It also combines Class A and Class B variances into one fee. Any questions?
So I see how much it is.
Oh. Okay.
So do we have a motion?
Well, just a question on that. On the variances, you have class A and B.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's a class A and a class B.
Mm-hmm.
So they're
but they require
they're both,
the same amount.
Okay,
of
so they're both. So if you get class A, it's 300, or class B, it's 300.
Right.
Okay. So I should say. Okay.
I don't know why they're classed that way, but they are.
All right.
Do they already? Do you have to get a right-of-way permit with the county if you work in the city? I know the county has their own right-of-way permits, but
no.
You don't have to get a right-of-way permit
no.
with the county? If you're, okay.
Just with us.
Okay.
Yeah.
I did on my property. I had to go through the county.
You did?
When? 20 years ago?
Maybe.
Maybe that's where you were in the city?
I'm in the city. I started in the city.
I don't know.
But when I bought the property north of me, I had to go through the county because it's a county road.
Right.
Oh,
that
right.
Would be
right.
Different.
That's true. If you're on a county road, it would be county.
Yeah. So you get a county right away permit and not a city?
Right.
Okay. I'll make a motion to approve resolution 2015.11.
Second. Been moved and second to approve resolution 2015.11 fee schedule as presented. Any more discussion?
I have some problems with the worksheet thing. To me, it'd be kind of like going to the supermarket or Bi-Mart and buying something. They ring it up and then say, now there's a $2 processing fee. And, you know, staff is already working in that office. Mm-hmm. And in the newspaper, there was a big article in the News Review Sunday night about the planning department is cutting all our hours. DEQ is cutting their hours. I'm wondering where all this is going. You know that, and then we're going to start charging more money. And I don't know. Just to me, it's we just did a budget, and the budget was a balanced budget, and. You know, we were good, and now all of a sudden we want to raise fees. To me, this should have come to a budget, you know, something that was, you know, at a timely, we're raising fees, and it's kind of like we're just taxing the people.
Well, the reason last time we talked about this is if you're doing a new construction in our community, you pay for a worksheet. If you don't, it's a remodel, it's existing, there's no charge for your worksheet. And they have time going in there, and, you know, I go in there, and usually it takes them an hour, you know, to get the paperwork out to me and stuff, plus additional what time is, and there's no fee for it. So that's where when I look at what the personnel cost is, it's actually money that's going to come back to the city that they are actually spending additional time. If it was a new construction, you're going through the whole process, and then you're paying for a worksheet. But if it's an existing building, you need remodel, addition, stuff like that, there's no charge for it.
But does there need to be a charge for it?
Well,
I mean, they're there. They're already paid.
Yeah, planning, though, has a lot of action to want it. You know what I mean?
But do we have lines out the door? I mean, are they waiting for this? I mean, that's...
Well, I don't think $25 is that much money compared to. There's a
Does the staff have any input?
Well, this is a, Mr. Mayor, members of council, this is just good fiscal management in the first place, every year to review our fees, so you don't get 5 years down the road and realize that all the taxpayers are subsidizing new development. Theoretically, the intent is that those fees will pay, free up those revenues so you can fix potholes. It's just a matter of choice. Do you want to subsidize a developer in the new construction of a home, or should that new development pay its own way so that the taxpayers who already live here and are paying their taxes and have paid those fees for their home can get potholes fixed? That's really the theory. So it is only $25. 10 years from now, it's $250,000. And the ripple effect throughout the general fund is healthier.
So, and I see the city manager's point in that if you were going to charge me $2 a month to send me my water bill, I would not like that because you're paying for that. Everybody's paying for it through their water service. But the people who are actually going in and using the planning department should contribute something, I think, to the planning department wages and expenses.
Well, on the other hand, half of this community hasn't paid anything in the building department. That's right.
That's right.
Only new construction in the last few years has paid into everything. Mm-hmm. So people that are remodeling in the older communities still aren't paying a fee. Right. So this is just a fee that's going to try to equalize.
But they are paying property taxes, and they could be paying higher property taxes if they're going to upgrade their structures.
But when we look at wages and stuff, just the CPI is way over $25. Mm-hmm. I mean, just in wages to planning going up. You know, I mean, somehow or other, there has to be an offset. It's, you know, I don't want to see raises. I don't want to pay it. I'm the one that's going to be paying it. I'm going to bill it to Todd. No, it's a deal where when you go in there and, you know, you usually go in there twice. You know, you get paperwork filled out and drop it off, and they do their homework. And then it comes back to you. And true, there's, you know, they are there all the time, but they have stuff going on all the time. You know, so there's a lot of stuff that goes through planning. Planning is the start of everything that goes on in your community.
Have we estimated how much revenue this is going to bring in? Do we even try to take a stab at that?
It's not
going to
be significant. No.
Actually, planning, it doesn't start with planning. It starts with the individual that wants to do something. You know, if you drive down on Duke and Flat M, that piece of property down there that we just brought into the city limits, they're building a house on that corner. And it's remarkable. You go down and take a look at that. These people have done it. I mean, they got an acre and a half of ground they're building on. 2,300 square foot home. They got a, you know, 4-car garage, and this thing is just nice. You know, and that's going to bring in. And you start looking at something like this, $200,000 to $300,000 value of the property taxes are going to way outweigh anything that's your $25 fees. You know, I mean that's
right. He paid 4,900 fees to build that house. That's half of the SBCs that he would have paid, but. In order to start that house, he paid $4,900 for it. Mm-hmm. So by the time you're 40, what is it, 47?
Yeah.
$4,700 to $4,900.
Yeah.
And now somebody on the other side of town that's lived in a house 50 years, he's going to do a remodel and he's going to come in and get his paperwork done for nothing. So that just, we just put all the burden on the new construction and we're not putting anything on anybody else. You know, that's the problem with not evening it out, where everybody pays a little bit of their own part. And like I said, I don't think there's not going to be 50 of these a year. Mm-hmm. So we're not talking a big revenue jump.
Is there any more discussion?
There are arguments. So.
Anybody else got anything? Go ahead and vote.
Councillor Stone?
Aye.
Councillor Egbert?
No.
Councillor Boggs?
Aye.
Councillor Meyer?
Aye.
Councillor Anderson?
No.
Councillor Lazier?
Aye.
Mayor McKnight?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Okay, so we are also, the next resolution is to for the transformative downtown application. I'm told that not all the information came in. Is that correct? Well, so we're going to pull that off?
We're in the process right now of applying.
Okay. So you want to wait?
Yeah.
Okay.
Applying for what?
Applying for a Main Street.
While she's looking at that, the Southern Downtown Development Association, when they formed, had to do some certain parameters to become a certified Main Street program. They are now a certified Main Street program, but there are different levels. And so this is going to the next level, which gives them access to additional grants and benefits.
Transformation.
So they're not at a level where they can get grants at this
some.
Point?
No,
they can,
some.
Well, I don't know if we can, but the transformation we will be able to do.
So we'll put that on in the future when you have more information.
So, but what about Murphy? Does Murphy have to sign off on this, and has he signed off on this?
Well, I saw your email. Vicki's researching it. I remember when I was here, of course, this was before, but I had multiple discussions, and former finance director Harker and I not only consulted with the attorney but consulted with Murphy. And one of the comments I recall, and I can't remember where it came from, either Murphy or the attorney, these Main Street funds are exactly what Murphy intended to have them go to. It's for downtown beautification projects, street projects that improved. They did not want to just go into the general fund and pay for general admin. They wanted them to go to projects.
Right. Okay. I kind of remember something like that. But I didn't know if there was something that we needed to get have him signed, because these are very protected funds, that
right.
I understand. But the other thing is that we've given money not through this fund, but just directly sometimes to SDDI, just giving them money directly for scrap metal or sales of vehicles or that kind of thing. And when we did it at the time, we were supposed to be kept informed of how that money was being used, and we've never gotten a thing from them. I have no idea what they do except
for we make that a part of their next presentation.
Mm-hmm. Put that down, put that all in the...
Dan, do we need to keep that fund going then if we only give them $4,300 a year?
Yeah, we have to keep it going until the funds are exhausted. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, once they get it to the position where they need to be, they can have, well, why drag it out to $4,300 a year? I mean, we said we'd give it to them for grant matches, but they have to fulfill certain qualifications.
If Mr. Mayor, you guys might recall, we actually tried to give this to them last year, mm-hmm. and they said, we're not ready to take it. We don't sure. have the Main Street certification. We'd rather have it stay with the city. And so
give it to them next year. Last year.
I guess they're at that point.
We did?
We did. We should tell them. Just take it.
We wouldn't have us. Okay, so that'll be on in the future then. Mm-hmm. Okay. On to the resolution 2015.13, authorizing officer and bond counsel. Call for staff report.
Dan Wilson, finance director. This is, as it states in the resolution, it's a legal resolution, spells out all the details, giving the city manager and myself authorization to negotiate the final terms of the loan with DEQ, and officially appointing Mayor Shaw Shannon as our bond counsel for the city to review the loan documents for us.
We have a motion.
I move to approve resolution 2015.13 as presented.
I'll second it.
It's been moved and seconded to approve resolution 2015.13, authorization to officer and bond counsel as presented. Any more discussion or any discussion?
Like, we got all the wetlands issues.
No, well, this it's still.
So it may be still 2 or 3 months before this.
I don't think it'll be that long. I'm hopeful.
We've been hopeful for 6 months. So,
for over a year.
Yeah,
it's hard to say. Who's Mayor Serrar?
They've represented the city before.
Okay.
On bond issues.
Okay.
Or they did for the Cooper Creek water
company. Oh, okay.
Most recently.
Any more discussion? Go ahead and vote.
Councillor Stone?
Aye.
Councillor Egbert?
Aye.
Councillor Boggs?
Aye.
Councillor Meyer?
Aye.
Councillor Anderson?
Aye.
Councillor Lazier?
Aye.
Mayor McKnight?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Okay, on to ordinance number 1046, marijuana taxation, adding a new chapter 8.18 to the Southern Municipal Code, first reading, title only, and adoption. City Recorder.
Actually, it's the city attorney, Mr. Mayor.
Oh, city attorney. Okay, I've got a report here.
That I'm supposed to read the title.
Hang on, Jerry.
She's got to read the title.
I need to read the title.
She needs to read that.
Oh, my apologies.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Don't mark that down.
I'm writing that down.
That's one.
Ordinance number 1046, marijuana taxation. An ordinance adding a new chapter 8.18 to the Sutherland Municipal Code, prohibiting the establishment of marijuana facilities within the city and declaring an emergency.
Now, the city attorney.
Thank you.
Mr. Mayor, members of the council, Chad Jacobs from the city attorney's office. So what's before you tonight is a new ordinance that would prohibit marijuana facilities within the city of Sutherland. As you may recall, the city previously passed an ordinance doing this exact same thing. And during that point in time, the legislature was wrangling with whether they should amend state law to explicitly allow local jurisdictions to prohibit marijuana facilities within their local jurisdictions. After a lot of legislative wrangling, the legislature agreed to House Bill 3400, which expressly permits local jurisdictions to prohibit six of the seven marijuana facilities that exist out there. As you may recall, there are three types of facilities under the medical marijuana program. There's medical marijuana grow sites, medical marijuana processors, and medical marijuana dispensaries. And there will be four types of facilities under the recreational program. There'll be recreational growers, recreational processors, recreational wholesalers, and recreational retailers. What the House Bill 3400 allows cities to do is actually prohibit all of those facilities except for medical marijuana grow sites. We don't have express authority under state law to do that. We do, however, have express authority to prohibit the other six entities, the caveat being that we have to actually refer the ordinance to the voters at the next statewide general election, which will be November 2016. In the interim, if you would want to adopt this ordinance, the state won't issue any licenses or register any dispensaries. So it basically puts a moratorium, in fact, until the voters actually have a chance to vote on the measure in November 2016. Assuming the voters uphold that, then that you will have a law in place that conforms with House Bill 3400. And in essence, what this does is it takes away the state preemption argument from any potential litigation that might arise in the future related to these types of facilities. So based on your previous actions in wanting to ban these facilities, I talked to city staff and recommended that you go ahead and pass one of these ordinances under House Bill 3400 as expeditiously as possible, because that sets that moratorium in place until November 2016. It would be consistent with the law that you already have in place, so it's not really changing anyone's rights. But it does then, at least if there is any sort of challenge or litigation, take away the state preemption argument with regard to those facilities.
So, Chad, I have a question. I understand that if 55% or more of the population voted against legalizing marijuana, that we did not have to put this to a vote. Do you know if that is a county vote, or would that be a Sutherland vote?
So the 55% number is based on the county. So if 55% of the county residents voted against it, then you wouldn't have to put it to a vote. The vote on this ordinance, on your specific ordinance, will just be a citywide vote, and it'll just be city residents voting on the ordinance.
But we have to follow the 55% county rule, okay?
Correct, yes, because the county, 55% of the residents in the county didn't vote against Measure 91, then we have to actually refer it to the ballot.
Okay.
So, Chad, why is this on a tax resolution?
You know, that's just a typo in the agenda. I'm not sure why that happened, but as the ordinance itself says, it's not dealing with taxation, it's just dealing with the prohibition. The only taxation issue that you should be aware of, and I apologize, I failed to mention this, is that if you prohibit any of these facilities, you don't have any right to, one, tax marijuana, or to have any of the shared revenues from the state's tax on marijuana. They expressly state that if you prohibit them, you don't get any taxes. Given that you're going to prohibit them, there wouldn't be any local tax anyways. And that, you know, given that the state shared revenues are based on the number of facilities within the city, since you wouldn't have any number of facilities in the city, you wouldn't derive any tax from that either. So it's not like you're really giving up a lot of money.
Well, I'm not thinking on this bill here as to what the tax would be as far as the marijuana. I'm thinking property tax, income tax, workers' compensation, anything that you would be paying. Because I was reading the deal to where 50 people were working at this one facility in a processing up north, and they're in an enterprise zone. And this here is closing down medical marijuana processors, dispensaries, growers, recreational processors. We have an opportunity. We have land down here in an enterprise zone that could actually process, and we're not taxing. It's not coming from the state.
I'm not sure you understand what enterprise zone is. If it's an existing building, they would not get a tax benefit. If it's already on the tax roll.
There's no existing buildings down there.
Just want to make that clear. You keep throwing that out.
They could take that 25,000-foot building the county's going to build for us down there and turn it into a processing center.
But they would not get enterprise zone benefits because it's a county building. So you want to be real careful if you're telling people that.
If they have worked 25 workers.
That building is going to be a county-owned building. They will not get enterprise zone. Because it's government
building.
Okay,
well, what happens if they build their own building?
Well, if they build their own building, they would get it. Okay. Let's make sure we understand what we're talking about here. So,
but if they employ 25 workers, 25 workforce people in our area,
they'll get 3 years tax benefits on the property tax.
Well, I'm not even worried about that. I'm thinking hiring 25 people to work. That's where work. This is based on tax.
That's up to you.
Well, so Councilor Stone, you know, I would just point out that by all means, this is a policy decision for the council. If the council wants to view these marijuana facilities as an economic development opportunity like other jurisdictions have, you can certainly do that. The reason that I recommend a staff that we bring this to you as expeditiously as possible is based on the previous decision of the council. The council previously voted that they wanted to ban these facilities. The way we did it previously left open a state preemption argument. By passing this ordinance, you would take that state preemption argument off the table. So in order to sort of do some risk management and avoid that potential litigation, I recommended that we bring this to you for your consideration. Now, if the council as a body decides it wants to allow these facilities for economic development purposes, by all means, we don't have to pass this. We can repeal the previous ordinance and you can move in that direction. That's purely a policy discussion. But I just want to be clear, if you do want to stick with your current policy, I strongly recommend that you adopt this ordinance so you take that state preemption argument off the table.
Do we have a motion?
I make a motion to approve ordinance number 1046.
Second.
It moved and seconded to adopt ordinance 1046 by first reading, title only, declaring an emergency as presented. Any more discussion?
I'd just like to say one thing without anything. You better think neutral here. Because our job is not to think whether or not it's right or wrong. Our job is to govern this. And the way you govern stuff is you enact it in a certain zone and you take the taxes from it, property, income tax to anybody working there. This is closing the door to business that we have land to do. So sooner or later, people think that it isn't coming to our area. It's coming to our area. It's been here 50 years. I grew up right here. And let me tell you, I don't do it, but it's here. You think they're just going to go to Roseburg or Eugene. They're just going to still bring it here.
So, I have two things to say. First of all, it's federally illegal. And I have a real problem with having laws that aren't enforced and laws that are conflicting with other laws, because all it is doing is putting the people in chaos and in confusion and in lawlessness. That's a big problem in our country today. Nobody knows what the heck the law is anymore. And until, if the federal government wants to come in and say, you know, okay, we understand that medical marijuana is a good thing, and so we agree to make that lawful and it can be regulated through pharmacies like other medicines, that's fine with me. It might be fine with me to have recreational marijuana. I don't know, I'm not at that point. but I just hate this conflicting laws and this confusion that it puts everyone in. The second thing is that there might be 25 people that it makes jobs for, but there might be a lot of people with families that say, you know what, they don't sell pot in Sutherland, and I'm going to settle my family there. That might also make 25 jobs in construction.
These processors don't sell in that community. Beer makers don't sell the product in that community. They ship it all over the place. So you're talking closing down a business that could be a distributorship that you don't even have in your own community. You might not even be able to sell it in your own community. It's fine for microbrews to be on every corner, wineries to be on every corner, liquor stores.
Not really fine with me.
Well, you're acting as a conscience. You're not being to where you're governing, and that's your job, it appears, to govern.
My job is the same as your job, and that's we took an oath to uphold the federal law, period.
Chad?
Okay, so.
Can we get a question in here before he's
Yeah, well, I'm going to say we've discussed this, so we got to sum up your points and we're going to be moving on.
Just the question here. It says, all this ordinance is doing is basically delaying this process till the general election in November, and where our constituents can say yay or nay, they want marijuana in this community.
Correct.
Then there's nothing wrong with hearing from the folk. And I'm not going to make the decision for them. That's what voting is for. If they want it here, fine. If they don't, fine.
Chad, is the state giving licenses at the beginning of the year for the processing centers?
The state is going to, under Measure 91, the state has to begin accepting applications for recreational processors at the beginning of 2016. I've been told that OLCC likely won't begin issuing licenses until the second or third quarter of 2016.
So, and this vote isn't until November, so you just got yourself out of a year of a business.
I don't care. Let the folks have their say. You know, if they want it, I'm fine. We'll go with what they say. If they don't want it, then I'm for that too. Personally, I don't want it in any way, shape, or form. I never arrested anybody on hard stuff that didn't start on marijuana. And so,
okay, we're getting off. Yeah, we're going to be moving on. Let's go ahead and vote.
They started on wine and beer.
Councillor Stone?
No.
Councillor Egbert?
Yes.
Councillor Boggs?
Aye.
Councillor Meyer?
Aye.
Councillor Anderson?
Aye.
Councillor Lazier?
Aye.
Mayor McKnight?
Aye.
Motion carries.
On to reports. Fire service update. Fire chief.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, Council. Charles Perdomo, Fire Chief of Sutherland Fire Department. I'm here tonight to give you a fire service update.
Mr. Mayor, before we get started, can I just do a little something? Yeah, I'd like all the volunteers, I saw a bunch of you stand up.
Come on.
That are here for us. I just, you know, last time we didn't have a crowd.
All right, fire chief, one more time.
Okay, I was going to do that, but thank you.
And we didn't talk thunder. Today, did we?
Stoltless telepathy.
Stoltless thunder.
I'm going to talk to you about four areas tonight. I'm going to start off with the organizational structure. So far this month, we've run on 24 calls. We are continuing to refine our department operations. And we are currently involved in creating policy and procedures for department operations and our personnel. For equipment, we're continuing to order needed equipment as we are doing inventory and checking out the equipment that we currently have. We realize that we needed more additional equipment than we originally intended to get. We're addressing equipment and apparatus maintenance as needed, both for mobile operations and for the station. And there was a list requested of missing and or needed equipment last council meeting that was requested, I believe, if I'm mistaken, was a council stone. I've been working on that list. I was really hoping to have it completed, but we've run into issues of additional equipment and reevaluating exactly, so I want to have it as accurate as possible. That list is almost complete. I'll have it before the end of the week. I'll be furnishing it to the city manager so that he can furnish it to the council. As for training, what I'm going to do is I'm going to go ahead and introduce our new Assistant Fire Chief, Troy Brevik, so he can come up and give you the update on that.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, council members. My name is Troy Brevik, and I'm the Assistant Fire Chief of Sutherland Fire. This is my first week on the job, and I completed that first week. During that time, I've been working with Mr. Gene Fisher, getting the transition through, working with him, getting updates, and working with how to proceed with training and continuing the quality education within the department. Also been, as far as training is completed this month, we just this last weekend completed a 16-hour extrication course, motor vehicle extrication course, which will assist our volunteers in providing a much-needed service in the event of a motor vehicle collision or accident to safely extricate our those in need to pass on to the ambulance service. And this next month, we're planning on doing some live burns with the burn trailer before the county takes the burn trailer and moves under the next department. So that's where we're at with training. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, fourth and last, which is probably the most pressing issue before us tonight, is going to be an issue that has brought some confusion, and that has to do with our response to lift assist calls. With that said, I'll just give you a little bit of a current status as to what we're currently doing and a little bit of background. Currently, as of today, there is nobody currently responding to Citizens of Sutherland for lift assists. When we started July 1st, we started under the pretense that the fire department was not going to be doing medical calls. That's my understanding, what the city council had agreed upon since last year. I don't know the exact month because I was not here at that time, but somewhere along the lines of August or September, maybe even before that or after. But it's been a perception that has been expected for a while. I was hired under that understanding. So we prepared for when we went online July the 1st, not providing medical calls. When I came on board, I discussed this matter with my predecessor, and we both agreed that the majority of the lift assist calls, if processed properly, starting off with dispatch and followed up with personnel on the scene, will elicit a medical complaint, with the probability of the majority of these calls being medical in nature. We've decided these calls are calls we're not going to respond on. With that said, I want to clarify that the fire department, we are responding to public assist calls. We're just not responding to public assist calls that involve us interacting with a human being for assistance, physical assistance, because that has the high potential of developing into a medical call. So I just wanted to clarify that, because I know there was also a little bit of confusion as to if we're running on any public assist calls or not.
What would be a public assist call besides for a lift assist?
Well, we had a call that I responded on last week, or actually last weekend, 10 days ago, roughly. Somebody called and wanted us to make sure that the house was not going to collapse on them. There was a structural integrity issue. Mm-hmm. We responded, and I advised them we're not engineers. We are not electricians, and that resource that person would have to obtain privately. If a person, yesterday we got a call for a water line that was leaking. So I went out there and I looked at the water line. I realized it's not on the city's side of responsibility, it's on the homeowners or the property owners, and I advised them the solution would be to get a plumber. Those are public service calls. But when somebody calls for a lift assist, there's just way too many variables. The intricacy of these calls are way too complex to us get involved with them, with the fact that we don't currently we do not have a medical director. We do not have medical protocols approved by a medical director. We don't even have the personnel trained to the level of either a first responder and or an EMT. And even if we did, we could not operate. Like in my case, I'm a paramedic, but I'm not licensed in the state of Oregon because my job did not require that. And even if I was licensed in Oregon, I can't operate in this state unless I'm working under the license of a medical doctor. So that's a problem in itself. I was under the impression that the current ASA holder was providing the ambulance calls for lift assist, even though we were not responding. I had no knowledge that they stopped providing that service as of the 8th of July. I did not find that information out until the 21st of July. So from that day on...
No one notified you?
No, ma'am. The sheriff's office was the one that notified me through a memo that was provided to us. So with that said, I'm asked by numerous people, what are we going to do? And at this time, we could respond, but all that our volunteers are going to do, which is one of the options for an immediate short-term solving the problem, is going to be we respond, but the moment we accept the call, we're going to have to request for an ambulance to respond with us. We're only going to be as good as providing public support. We really won't be able to interact, because once we touch a person and we take action, now we're opening liability, not just for the department, but for the city as a whole. As a result, I've come up with a couple of options. To me, the best option right now, from the research I've done, and I've had a limited amount of time, is for us to hire, aside from us taking the initiative of responding on these calls, and there's nothing we can do, is hire a third-party service. Whatever that service may be, a service that's turnkey that can come in and run these public assist calls, and if they do run into a situation that they encounter a medical situation, that they have the personnel that are trained to and certified to do that. An intermediate option would be to continue recruiting volunteers, except recruit volunteers now that are willing to do medical calls, because the volunteers that we currently have were brought on board under the intention or the pretense that they were not going to be running medical calls, they're going to do fire calls. We need to train those volunteers up to a first responder level, which is, we're guesstimating between the training and additional other training that they, basic required training and additional training, approximately about 60 hours of training, and there's a cost involved with that, plus uniforms and certain pieces of equipment that was not budgeted for. And also get a medical director, establish medical protocols, have them reviewed and approved by him. So we're looking at a minimum of 8 to 9 months down range before that we can go that route. And then long term would be to hire full-time personnel to staff the fire department 24 hours a day, EMTs or paramedics, which is not really a feasible option. But the short-term option, if you do get a third-party service, that third-party service can carry over to the intermediate and the long-term of providing the lift assists, at least through the end of the current ASA contract.
I heard about this and heard about the problem and heard that Chris Boyce was at a meeting with some of you and called Chris Boyce. He's our county commissioner. Because I know him, I campaigned for him, and I've gone through a lot of the county protocols and the county ASA rules, and I don't see where it would be beneficial for us to really proceed with any kind of medical response, except for we had in our April 27th packet from when we were voting on the fire department, it says, in the future, if there is a change in policy, the use of EMS volunteers is a possibility. Some volunteers do not like firefighting but are trained in emergency medicine. These volunteers can provide rehab for firefighters, provide standby at sporting events, and do blood pressures at the fire service, blood pressures at the fire station, I guess. And, yeah. So anyway, the way that I read the ASA rules, that a lift assist call is a medical call, and the ambulance service is responsible to answer all medical calls.
Yes, ma'am.
Do you read the same thing?
I read the ASA, and my understanding from the ASA is that they're responsible for emergency and non-emergency medical calls. my position, as it was, or as is my predecessor's position, is that lift assist fall under the medical category. I can't speak for them. My opinion is those are medical calls. And that's where the difference of opinion comes. The difference of opinion is the service is not being provided for what reason. I can't speak for the other side, but from our side, we have a situation that I personally have knowledge of two calls. One, I personally received a call. They called the fire station and provided information about a fall that required help. And my first question was, this was the first week I was at the fire station at night, has a person been injured? And I was told, yes, she has a bump on the head. Well, to me, I don't care if it's a little bump or a big bump. That's a head injury. That qualifies under traumatic head injury. It may not be much, but I'm nobody to determine that. When I happened to look at the trauma protocol for Douglas County that they left at the fire station, it covers trauma, accidents, and falls and accidents. And the verbiage of the body of that protocol clearly, without a question, explains the severity of a fall injury, especially on a person that's 75 years old or greater. It's the number one cause of injury in that age bracket, and the second cause in the age bracket between 64 and 74. So even that protocol focuses on how important and how focused that needs to be addressed, not to include research I've done online that discusses the issue of lift assist calls being medical in nature. And it branches off into other areas of departments that are currently billing residents and citizens for showing up at their house and offering them a hand anywhere from the range of $50 to like $230.
I don't think that's unreasonable. If you're going to charge a citizen to come in and fill out a piece of paper, if you're going to go pick them up and put them back into bed, I don't think it's unreasonable to charge them either.
Yeah, that's not for me to make that decision.
Yeah.
Chief, wouldn't the easiest thing to do would be to educate the public as to how they make their calls?
Yes, we can do a public service aid like cities around the country have done.
I mean, if you fell down and you got a bump on your head, the public needs to know that they need to call the ambulance and not the fire department now that we're volunteers. If we send out flyers, you know, once a month or something and educate the public instead of hiring people to enter an ambulance or EMTs or something like that, its main thing is just the way the call's coming through dispatch.
There's a lot of variables, and, you know, I'm used to a certain system that from the moment the call is received at the 911 center, there's a system that asks specific questions to elicit specific answers and either categorize the call as a medical call or not. But we're not privy to that system, so we don't have the benefit of that option when it comes in through 911. It's up to the responding personnel through either proper dialogue or patient assessment to determine if it's medical in nature or not. And I was hired to provide the best possible care for the citizens, and I'm not going to take a back seat to offer a lesser than best. You know, I want the citizens to have the best option for medical care, not try to take a shortcut and something happened and we'll never be able to live, you know, that mistake down.
Well, I think the first thing that we really need to do is we need to decide who is responsible for these calls. And quite frankly, my conversations with Chris Boyce were very unproductive. And it's obvious that their ASA rules say that the ambulance is responsible. Can I say something? And the protocols for falls say that they're medical, and I think that's the first thing we need to do. If they're not going to take the calls, then I suggest that we find a service to come in here that can do it. And
and we will have to charge the citizens for it.
Okay. Mayor, Council President, Councilors Kirk Sanfilippo, Chief of Police, City of Sutherland. So Chief Perdomo and I have been working together on this issue for the last several weeks. I've attended all the meetings he's attended. I've made the introductions with the dispatch manager and the undersheriff and the sheriff, and in this case, unexpectedly, Commissioner Boyce and a couple of other people that showed up to this meeting that we weren't aware would be there. So here's where we are. Consistent with what the police department's done, we as a public safety collective agency, police and fire, we want to do what we can to grow and enhance the quality of life for the people that live here. Historically and institutionally, all of the other fire jurisdictions in Douglas County respond to lift assist calls across the board unequivocally. There are no other agencies that don't respond. Now, the other agencies that do respond, for the most part, are all trained at first responder level to be able to go. But as soon as they respond, they ask for an ambulance to go with them because they know what the statistical probability is that somebody's probably going to end up injured. Maybe being transported, maybe not. So what we were trying to do is brainstorm, how do we make sure we give the citizens the best possible attention and service that we can based on the resources that Chief Perdomo finds himself with a predominantly volunteer fire service group of volunteers who signed on to do firefighting, not emergency medical calls. So, you know, what we're going to propose is make the recommendation that we answer up to go to lift assist calls, but as soon as we do, we ring down the ambulance and we have the ambulance go with us. We know we can't do anything when we get to the call as far as moving the person. There are occasions, and I've listened to them, where you'll hear a call, the person needs to get from their home to their car because they got to go to their doctor, and they're asking for somebody to come and assist moving them. And then when they get back from the doctor, they're asking for somebody to respond to help them go from their car to the residence, back to the residence. Now, best case scenario is maybe one of us would be responding to this situation. Best case scenario, Chief Perdomo and Assistant Chief Brevik are both on duty and they can both respond. But this isn't a 24-hour day, 7-day a week, 365-day opportunity or option that we have here. So we're going to say, you know, for the short term, immediate, we respond, and as soon as we do, we send an ambulance. For the intermediate, Chief Perdomo works with the city manager and me, and we come up with some options realistically about how we could do this longer term to be able to provide some sort of service to the citizens, whatever that looks like. Whether or not that involves a fee, no fee, outside contract, we just wanted to fix it, you know, for the immediate, because Douglas County has made it clear their expectation is they give us a call, we're going to respond, and in some cases, we know we just don't have the volume of resources that we need.
Okay, when I talked to Chris Boyce, he kind of, just over the phone, but I could just kind of hear it in his voice, but he kind of puffed up his chest and said, you know, Chief LaBelle signed the run card saying that he would take these medical calls. Did you see that run card?
No. I did see the medical calls today. What happened is the medical calls, he was to put in there the units that were going to respond on different categories. The cards, and I have a copy of there I can furnish, for medical shows blank.
Yes.
It only, for us, it shows blank. The only response unit for medical calls is Douglas District 2. And that was a confusion that we looked at those cards this morning because of that statement that was made at the meeting when we met with him and the sheriff, undersheriff, district attorney.
So why did they even call us?
I don't know.
Well, Chris Boyce said they called us because they're non-medical. But to me, if you fall and you cannot get up, there's a medical reason for that.
Absolutely. And that's my position. And that's what I was explaining, that's the confusion.
Go ahead, Chair.
Well, we talked about this at great length throughout the year, that there's this middle road calls that we weren't going to be able to go on. What we didn't know or don't fully understand is how dispatch interprets those calls and calls them out. And my communications with Commissioner Boyce is that dispatch does not have the ability or chooses not to distinguish between those gray calls. And so all gray calls throughout Douglas County, the local fire agencies called first. Immediately upon that call being made, that fire agency then taps out the ambulance. Theoretically, the program is set up, even though it's a little archaic for us, that both engage, but whichever one it applies to stays and the other disengages. So this isn't the presentation I expected for you to see tonight. The point of it tonight is, at the end of the day, we cannot really control what the commission and the sheriff and dispatch does. They're going to do what they're going to do. We have no authority over them. At the end of the day, then, that's 20 calls a month in which we have our citizens at potential risk. We're not in the business of just letting that go. And so, as Chief Sanfilippo said, our immediate response right now is that we're going to create a mechanism where we're able to respond and call the ambulance out with us so that our citizens don't lose. From there, I don't really want any more discussion about what the other options are, because we haven't followed through them, but we too want to bring this back to you in a workshop and, as a team, develop a well thought out and achievable process that may or may not include contracting out. It may include any number of other options. Contracting out, as I explained, is a 90-day process. You've got to put it up to bid, you got responders. In the meantime, our citizens are losing. So the short term is that we put together and are implementing a team and a system that will give us the ability to respond to these gray calls that we foresaw them coming. We talked about it many times, but we didn't know to what level or how many. We now know it's about 20 a month, and we're going to fix it. And then we want to bring you back into a workshop and bring you our recommended strategy for creating a longer-term and more permanent fix.
Is this a council policy call?
I think so. I think in terms of moving forward with that long-term fix, yes.
Okay. And what about in the short term? You're going to take the call and call the ambulance, which is the ambulance doesn't want to be called, evidently.
No, the ambulance doesn't mind coming out. That's what all the other agencies do. All the other agencies do the exact same thing. We just the fire chief and assistant chief, who are medically qualified, aren't currently certified through DPSST to do the full baloney. So, but they are qualified to make an assertion at showing up at a scene saying this is NARS.
Okay, well, regardless of what the team does, my personal experience with the county at this point in time was that they were avoiding the problem and avoiding taking responsibility for the problem. And I'm not happy with the way the county has handled the problem. I'm not happy with the fact that we have our ASA with Fire District 2 now. I am wondering if anyone here, did you get a notice from Fire District 2 saying that they were going to quit doing lift assist on the 8th?
What happened was
the fire department?
What happened was is that while I was gone, the fire chief contacted the mayor because I wasn't here. And the mayor contacted me. I did not know that they didn't communicate. Chief to chief. Our thought was that they were already in the loop and they were on board for that. And it was just a matter of a mix-up of communications. So, theoretically, the chief should have contacted our chief and let them do that.
Yeah, I just don't want the Fire District 2 chief thinking that he's going to contact the mayor, and that's where it...
No, he's setting up a meeting. I just said Jerry was out, and I just referred it to Jerry.
You didn't contact the fire department?
No,
you didn't think it was important because the letter was written?
Anyway, I contacted the city manager.
Yeah, it was just a matter of proper protocols and assumptions that the chiefs talked to each other. And my thought, he would just be nice to let us know, on the backside of the communications. I didn't realize it was an exclusive.
You were not here, were you?
No.
You were on leave?
Right.
That is one of the reasons why I wanted to have a safety officer in charge when you were gone. I think that it's important for the city to have a safety officer in charge.
Karen, when you asked the questions, I was just curious, why did you go to Boyce instead of Keith Cuby?
Because I heard Boyce was at the meeting. I didn't hear Keith Cubic was at the meeting. I don't know if he was at the meeting.
Keith Cubic's the czar of the ASA as to what their rules are and what they have to pick up. I mean,
yeah, he gave in presentation.
I've seen less than 20 minutes here, and his name hasn't even been mentioned one time. I mean, he's the one that should be stipulating what the regulations are. Chris Boyce don't know nothing. He's just got his job, and he's just going off of what...
Well, Chris Boyce needs to know something because he's an elected official, and I am the person, and the citizen is the person that's going to go to their elected officials when they're upset with something.
Well, Keith's been running all the regulations for, what do you say, 10 years now?
Mr. Mayor, I think Councilor Meyer makes a point that you should consider. There's two decisions here. There's the logistical, which is mine to make, and we're doing it, okay? We're going to put in a fix and bring back solutions to you. But the policy decision with regards to what is and what isn't and how dispatch operates is really a policymaker to policymaker type of, you know. Yeah, thank you. Yeah, and so I don't want to jump in and tell you how you should do that, but yet take your direction on how you'd like us to help you.
Well, you know, it seems to me that, you know, if we can get a legal opinion on the SA, like before said, we also get mm-hmm. Keith Cubic. I'm sure the county council is going to have some. I mean, all due respect, I'm not going to take Karen's version of what she thinks the ASA is. Mm-hmm. I mean, I wouldn't take anybody's. I wouldn't take my own. I would take a legal opinion. Mm-hmm. I think we need to sit down and see what the county says, see what we say, and try to work this out. Like I told you, I just don't want the people to go without the service.
Right.
We can point fingers, draw lines, and that's what I told the chief, and that's what I was telling you. I just want to try to fix the problem instead of going back and I told you so and this and that. That doesn't do anything for me. But my thing is to sit down and get legal counsel for the county, get legal counsel, get Keith Cubic, and see what we can come up with. That's my thought. You know, I just want to try to fix the problem the best we can. And then right. If they got future plans, well, that will be addressed with the council. I mean,
So now what is the plan if somebody calls at 9 o'clock tonight that needs a lift assist? What is the plan? What's going to happen?
They call 911, dispatch. This is how I understand it. They call 911, dispatch gets a hold of our fire department. Our fire department calls ambulance.
Our fire department moves to respond and taps out the ambulance.
They both
just like Oakland does. Fair Oaks, all the other agencies.
So all of these agencies, because I heard the same thing from Chris Boyce, that mm-hmm. 22 out of the 23 agencies mm-hmm. all send someone, but they're also yeah. sending the ambulance.
Right.
Which is, we took a lift assist call on the day that Troy was sworn in, and a lift assist call came in, mm-hmm. and Chief Bell took it mm-hmm. because mm-hmm. the ambulance was there.
Right.
So there's not a problem. If that was the problem, then there shouldn't be a problem.
It's a dispatch protocol debate. And what we've said is that, you know, our main interest is just serving the citizens of Sutherland. The debate of the dispatch protocol, we can do as high as we can at staff to staff, and we've done that, and we've lost. So we're going to implement an immediate response to do that. As we understand it, and I've talked to other chiefs and other departments who have said that's what they do too. It is a normal, it could be that just solves it, but I don't think so. I think the longer term is doing what the mayor suggested and you know, organizing ourselves to have a communication session with elected officials to elected officials. And attorneys to attorneys to come to a reasonable solution.
Chad, have you read the ASA for Douglas County? The ASA rule.
I have, and we have been in communication with the county council's office and trying to see if we could work something out. And they've actually sent us some communications back. They're taking a pretty strong position, as Jerry said, at the staff level and even at the elected official level at this point, as far as we've been told, that they're going to dispatch these calls to us. And, you know, that's their position. They won't distinguish between medical versus non-medical. As, you know, Charlie mentioned, you know, any of these calls are pretty much medical calls. And they just take a different position on that.
Can you think of any reason why a person who fell and couldn't get up, why that would not, why, what would it be besides a medical reason?
I agree.
That's a medical reason.
I agree 100%. You know, the chief agrees. It's, you know, but the bottom line is it's the county's ASA. They get to interpret the ASA how they want, and they get to enforce the ASA how they want. And the county disagrees with us. And they, you know, and it's, you know, their basic argument from what I can tell is this is the way it's always been done, so this is how we do it.
Well, it says that the ambulance service is the administration of pre-hospital medical and out-of-hospital medical emergency or non-emergency care if necessary. It seems to me it's just plain cut and dry.
Well, I think we need to set a workshop. You know, and do what we're going to do, because we're not going to, it's a fire service update. I mean, we're going to, sure.
Don't we pay a substantial amount of money for the 9/11 to dispatch?
Through our telephone tax, yeah. I can't remember.
But we also contracted with them for dispatch services.
Everybody.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Well, yeah, we did. It was a
campfire.
Yeah. I know, but we did. You're right. I'm answering your question.
Well, I mean, they're taking our money. They should give us their service.
And that's the exact tax we took with that.
They dictate.
And that's why I think we just need to have a sit down. Because, I mean, you're talking and you have no other answers. You got no answers, so you're just arguing to argue. So.
Mm-hmm. But you might be thinking.
Exactly.
We've got a couple workshops that are important.
Thank you, Chief. Thank you.
Do you have any closing things, Chief? I'm sorry that got a little off.
I just want clarification so I can start. Mm-hmm. Like making phone calls to all my staff, my, you know, firefighters. So as of this moment on, when they tone us out, we're going to be responding.
I think you need to direct that. If that's the city manager's direction, is that?
Because they're all under the impression we're not. So I need to start making phone calls as soon as the meeting's over.
Is that the city manager's direction, or is that a policy call for the council to make?
If you
I think it's get a city
tap out
control,
for this. How many people are you going to have respond?
I don't know.
Do you have a select two or three that you'd say you guys are good for these lift assists, or is everybody going to go?
Everybody gets tapped.
Yeah. Yeah, but how many guys?
Everybody on the list gets tapped.
Yeah, I understand that, but how many are going to respond that don't need to be?
Depends on the day.
Two, three,
12.
Well, I mean, the nature of the call is going to dictate how many you probably need.
Yeah, Charlie and I are going to work on the whole protocol, but we just want to assure the council someone's going to be responding. We'll set that in motion. That was the city manager's direction.
Well, all right. Yeah, I guess we're going to. We had a meeting. Troy, you were there, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
All right.
Sure.
All right.
Sure.
Thank you. City manager update.
I want to talk about a phone call we had today in relation to the development project that we're working on. This Bruce Brunette has organized a limited liability corporation called Oregon Only. And the intent is, I want to elaborate on it because it dovetails and you need to know about this because we're working very aggressively on it. He's formed a limited liability corporation and the property owners are coming in on that. And so we're keeping them together. It's called Oregon Only. He's hired a person and he's done legal. As part of our responsibility for them doing that, he wants everything to be Oregon in terms of all the contracting, all the construction, all the businesses. You know, I was improperly whispering in Council Anderson's ear earlier about Nike and Columbia Sportswear and Pendleton and an Oregon Only retail component. It's going to be celebrating our timber history with the Timber Interpretive Center, a wine area. Our promise to him was that we'd get University of Oregon School of Architecture and Land Use to do the architectural and design work. And so we had a lengthy teleconference with them today, and that's moving forward. And on the 5th and on the 8th, we're doing follow-up meetings. So I just want to let you know that that's happening.
All right. right, city council business. Remember, monthly meeting time is limited. Please ask questions or make statements that are likely to benefit the group. Individual comments and questions that can be handled on a one-to-one basis should be handled outside the meeting. Councilor Jerry, do you have anything? Oh, I'm sorry. I'm get that in there. His new seat there.
Yeah, that's true. But the last council meeting, I brought up the panhandling or loitering.
I meant to do that.
Yeah, and I noticed it again, even today, out in front of ShopSmart. And you mentioned to me before the meeting that we possibly have an ordinance in place.
We adopted a panhandling ordinance, what, a year ago? A year and a half ago? Oh, not in the city limits proper. Okay. Well, then I was half right.
Okay. Well,
is this right in front of the store?
It's right in front of ShopSmart. I saw it.
Like on the sidewalk, like when you walk in the door?
Yeah, right on the road sidewalk. Right inside. And then I also saw it again. Right by McDonald's this last weekend.
There was one by Dairy Queen too.
Yeah, so it's starting to get a little bit. They're starting to spread out across the town.
Yeah. The reason we didn't change that was because it stopped. We couldn't make an ordinance against it because it stopped the kids from having car washes, stopped kids from selling candy, any of the school activities. If you make an ordinance, there was a guy that came in and wanted the panhandling stopped from going door to door, and that stopped kids from selling magazines, anything. Girls have to
be. Can't it be specific?
So that was where we dropped that. We just went to the access. I'm sure the exits.
Well, it stopped it at the exits because they're not there anymore.
Yeah, we've got the signs
moved on private property.
Yeah, I think it's primarily geared towards interfering with traffic flow.
Chad, can we write an ordinance that was exclusive to the, I guess, asking for money type thing?
Without going into too much detail, and it's certainly something we can talk about in an executive session, but as you know, in Oregon, there are pretty strong limitations on your ability to regulate speech. And, you know, panhandling is deemed a speech activity. So there are some pretty strong restrictions on what we can and can't do.
So it's opposite of the Green River Ordinance to where you're not really selling something, you're asking for money. So.
Yeah, especially when you're talking about those areas where it's what they call traditional public fora, where, you know, sidewalks and parks where people typically engage in free speech activities. Our ability to limit that, and especially when we're just saying panhandling as opposed to, you know, Girl Scouts selling cookies or people saying, you know, come to the car wash or whatever else, is problematic.
Well, I'm tired of getting people calling me about it, to be honest. I don't know what to do about it other than having them call the city, so I might have to do that.
Yeah, send an officer over.
Councilor Anderson, I would recommend that when you get those calls, have them call the non-emergency dispatch line.
I sent that today.
Yeah, let us send an officer out, and if there's a crime, we'll address it. If there's no crime, we'll not do anything with it.
Okay, I'll do that.
Got anything else?
Nope.
Councilor Lazier. Councilor Stone.
Oh, I just have a question. No, I just got a couple things. One. I was curious. I went to the rodeo grounds over there, and we had a good turnout over there, and the restrooms were locked. And so I was wondering, we had our police officers sitting over by the beer gardens, but if we're worried about people breaking stuff, couldn't we set somebody over there next to the restrooms to where, you know, I've seen people urinating out in the grass and everything else because the restrooms were locked. So is that...
No, the restrooms were locked, but...
It should have been.
They were on weekend.
That shouldn't have been. That's got to be the first time. Last year they were overlocked.
Mm-hmm. Now, last year one of them was broke and the other one was open and they blocked it.
Well, I know they stole them and they broke all the toilet paper.
Now, but I was just curious as to why when we had a function, you know, our parks are.
Maybe we should just
know that we're not open, but
get portable ones. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Let them ruin those.
On trail status, what's happening on it?
Trail status? It's moving forward.
Are they clearing ground or anything yet? Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, they got gravel.
Yeah.
I'm back to gravel.
Yeah, they're going to be moving kind of slow now, but I mean, they are moving. They're putting the trail in. They're not going to be paving it for quite some time. And at the end of the month, they'll be putting the pilings in for the bridges.
Okay, so it'll be a month for to get the pile, the ends in for the bridges in. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because when I was walking across over to the park, I didn't see where they'd done anything, where they're going to tear that bridge out. No.
At the park? Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, they're going to leave it there as a temporary use.
So, mm-hmm. The other thing, we need to address something that's at the Dutch Brothers. They totally block all the roads down there. Lately, you can't come off of onto that street because they're all trying to get in there. So I don't know if a sign needs to be put up to where you can't block traffic. You know, I guess we just need to go up and turn around to come back.
Yeah, turn around. Yeah, good point.
Because there's sometimes 5 to 8 cars out in the road where they just block the road and they're all trying to get in there. And if you're going into the mall area, you can't get in. So I know it's good, they got a good business there, but I don't know what the answer is there, but they can't do the turning lane out in the main road and then do the street going to the mall also.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that's all I got tonight.
Okay. Councilor Aber?
Well, I had a question on this fire, this thing. When Jerry's
not.
When we first talked about this, and I'm going back months and months ago, Jerry had said that we weren't going to have, they weren't going to be responding to medical. Now these volunteers have come on board, and now we're telling them they're going to respond to medical. And I'm wondering if did they have an option? Can they opt out, or I mean, you know, can without any penalties, or you know, do they have? Some kind of an immunity to if they do go on a call and something happens, you know, do they have any liability?
They're not going to do any medical. But we don't want to, with 20 calls a month, I would expect Floyd Van Sickle burning down my house personally. So we're going to do our best to not irritate Floyd Van Sickle.
Is there 20 lift assist calls a month, or just
that gray area?
It's just that whole gray area of medical lift assist. Okay. We don't know what they are.
Anything else?
It's
Councilor Boggs?
I just have a question for Vicki regarding these street signs, for Tim, either one of you. Is there any special expertise required to put them up? Like you, I know you have rotary connections that you could probably get a work party volunteer to do weekends. You know?
You would allow volunteer labor to do something that like
sure.
That?
Make sure they have
well, we're on it.
Yeah.
You might streets go
that way. Yeah.
I know there's some of them are looking for something to do besides
golf.
Give them a map.
Yeah.
I would hope I trust you a million of them, I'll tell you that.
Mm-hmm. Probably just need, you know, show how to do it once or twice.
They yeah, I'm not sure. If they can use the same post they've got, I think they can. So
I bet you could get a work party there. If you want.
That's a good idea.
Mm-hmm. Can Baron wants some assistance or somebody come out and supervise him a little bit?
Okay.
Councilor Meyer.
I noticed that IE Engineering was paid for Central Park playground work. Does that mean there's a design?
There is a design, huh?
Can I come and see it?
Yeah, of course you can. Hang it on the wall.
Okay. Oh, it's hanging on the wall.
Okay.
The other thing is, and I think probably Dan knows the answer to this and maybe even told us a couple months ago, I don't know, but in the state gas tax fund, there's $150,000 that wasn't spent this year, approximately. Is that money earmarked for something?
I think we have projects in there for sidewalks, slurry seals, overlays, that kind of thing, and we just didn't get expended.
But that's been an ongoing problem for years, is that we always say we're going to spend this money for street repairs, and it never gets spent. So it always looks like we set aside $300,000 or $400,000 for street repairs, but we don't spend it. So we're really not doing them. It's just, if Andy Parks, when we told him about this problem, says, well, that's not how it should be. If you have $150,000 left, that should roll over into the next year and add on to your $300,000 or $400,000. That's not how it goes. So,
Wait. She's got to handle it this year.
Okay. And then, what's his name? Bill Cagle was in here a few months ago saying that the usual savings on design build for wastewater treatment is 6%, but Wilsonville actually saved 40%. 6% of $22,000 was a lot of money. And but the guy that was with you at the time sitting up here, I don't remember his name.
John Irwin.
John Irwin.
Yeah.
He said that if you're going to do that, you have to start with DEQ now.
Well,
have we done anything about
that?
Oh,
yeah, we've already talked to DEQ. Currently, our 100% emphasis is getting this whole wetland environmental issue done, so we can immediately move into these considerations. But DEQ knows about it. We've had multiple conversations with John Gassick. He knows we're coming to them with consideration of this as an option. Because if it, you know, as I told Mr. Cagle, whom I met for the first time at that meeting in person, is that if there's a better way to build a mousetrap, is that the right way of saying it? We're going to do it. And so it's not lost on us.
Okay, and how are our water rights going?
Slowly, but going. Vicki may be able to give you an update.
I don't have any update. I'm still waiting for Brian to make that contact. I mean, he's made contact, but I'm waiting for him to schedule a meeting.
He's waiting for the guy to
get
back.
He's waiting what?
He's waiting for the guy, Banducci, to do what he's supposed to do.
Oh, that's on that, but we got a whole list of other water rights.
I'm waiting for Brian to come back and tell me. So, I don't know why his issue is, other than it's summer and everybody's got...
I think the question is where are we with the totality of all the water rights that you're responsible for carrying out with the attorneys, not just the single one?
Right, not just Banducci, but all of it.
Okay.
We're going to go up north, but we're waiting to...
It was Banducci that I was really interested in. I just asked the gentleman.
Brian told me that he's giving all the paperwork, that he's got to go to DEQ to get all his permits before he can do anything.
I thought his email that he sent out, all of us pretty well answered that
question. Yeah, we can't do anything for him. He needs to...
He's essentially learning what we've been living with most of our lives here.
Well, you know, when Rich Wine came in, that was one of his first recommendations, was to get our water rights done.
Right.
I'm wondering if he picked that up on the property, on the sales property, the sales of the property where the water and wastewater treatment plant is, and that he picked that up.
It's not a water right that he has.
It's a water agreement.
It's a water agreement in a land use transaction. So,
anything else?
No.
I don't have anything tonight. So, public comment. The purpose of public comment is to allow citizens to present information regarding items off the agenda. A time limit of 3 minutes per citizen shall apply. We have Anthony Harris, lift assist.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, councilors. My name is Anthony Harris. I live at 147 North Umatilla Street, apartment number 2. And
a volunteer firefighter.
What's that? I am a volunteer firefighter.
You weren't here to stand up when all the others did. You went out and texted somebody.
No, Douglas County Search and Rescue.
Oh.
I was talking to you. I am a licensed EMT for the state of Oregon also. And I have a lot of things that I could say that I'm just going to hold for the workshop. But I did have one important question. And that was about, because I guess the district said that they weren't going to respond on Lyft assist calls. So I guess I'm kind of wondering if they're going to, if we ask them, or if they're still not going to. Because it just as far as the liability for like me personally and all my fellow firefighters in our department and our city, if we touch somebody and they get hurt, I don't know if we have insurance that would cover that kind of thing. I know if the district was to respond and if they intend to respond, then that liability would fall on them because they are licensed and we're working under them. So I wouldn't be worried about it if they're going to respond, but if they're going to continue to refuse service, that liability thing might be a concern that counselors would have to think about. Because I'm not going to deny serving the community that I swore to serve, but that could get really hairy, you know, if something like that was to happen. Because these people are calling because they do have a medical reason, whether or not it's emergent or not. So that was the main concern that I had, and everything else can wait until the workshop, as far as I'm concerned. I just wanted to thank you for your time.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
I don't have any other, so meeting's adjourned. Thank you.
So there's a list of